Welcome to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Protests continue all across the country and the Southland after Friday's U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade, the 1973 ruling that guaranteed the right to an abortion in all 50 states. And we set up a phone line and asked you to share your thoughts and feelings on the ruling. Most of the responses we got were from folks who were angry or fearful.
Hi, my name is Luisa Cardoza. I wanted to say that I am incredibly sad and scared for the folks who are women identified at young girls, the future generation. I'm scared for them. I have an 11-year-old niece. I don't know what the world is going to look like for her. I have two stepsons. I don't know what the world is going to look like for them. And I'm in a same-sex marriage, and I don't know what the world is going to look like for my wife and myself.
Hi, yes, this is Lee Lucas from Venice, California. Today is just so sad and so depressing for women everywhere. I cannot believe in America in 2022 that we are going to force women to carry children, even in cases of rape or incest. I feel like the easiest way to stop unwanted pregnancy is to give every male a vasectomy at 13 and reverse it upon marriage. Why are we forcing women to carry children for 9 months when we don't even have a Family Leave Act? These Republicans won't even vote for free school lunches. How do they, you know, they're pro-life until there's an actual baby, and then they could care less about the actual baby.
It should be noted that we didn't get one call hailing the ruling, but there are celebrations that did happen locally, like outside a Planned Parenthood clinic in El Monte.
God had a greater goal to stop legal abortion in our nation, so I'm very joyful about that.
And there is joy today at the Right to Life League, a Pasadena-based organization whose mission is, according to its website, quote, dedicated to the support and protection of innocent human life from conception to natural death, end quote. Susan Swift is vice president of legal affairs for the Right to Life League, a group founded even before Roe v. Wade in 1967, whose work has now, decades later, borne some fruit at the Supreme Court.
We started fighting them in 1967, long before Roe versus Wade. That's when the Right to Life League was founded. We counseled then Governor Ronald Reagan against signing the first therapeutic abortion bill in California. That was the Beilinson bill. And he had already promised his word, he'd given his word that he was going to sign it. And after he spoke to the doctors and lawyers and citizens who went to lobby him from the Right to Life League, he promised us that he would never again sign another pro-abortion piece of legislation, and he kept his word.
Reagan would, of course, go on to win the American presidency in 1980 and remain staunchly anti-abortion. This was a speech that he made to activists in 1987.
Many of the most compelling arguments against abortion are as old as our civilization. Indeed, I would submit that a reverence for all human life is one of the distinguishing marks of true civilization.
You can't have happiness, you can't pursue happiness, you can't have liberty, and you certainly can't have privacy unless you exist. So this is a very disordered approach to our law to somehow say that the right to kill an individual is superior to that right, that individual's right to live. And that's why we've seen, as the Supreme Court just did in Dobbs, that step back and say, the Constitution does not have a right to abortion in it. We, meaning the federal judiciary, has no ability to judge this matter, and it goes back to the states. And that's where we are right now. And what the states are going to do is going to legislate this issue, and some states are going to pass abortion bills like California is doing, and other states like Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana and others are passing restrictions on abortion, which is as it should be, because it allows the people in those states to express their will Fortunately, I believe that most Americans favor restrictions on abortion. So we're going to see that more than half the states have already put some in place now. And that's going to continue as we see the midterms coming up. And in the 2024, we're going to start seeing pro-life legislators being put into place. And we're going to see a pro-life wave.
While Swift says most Americans favor restrictions on abortion, that's a red herring in this debate. Many of the states that now outlaw abortion have no restrictions in place whatsoever. It is illegal to abort no matter what the circumstance, rape, incest, even the life of the mother. The fact is that most people in America, certainly in California, favor a woman's right to choose, full stop. A poll done by NPR, PBS NewsHour, and Marist, taken over the weekend, shows that 56% of Americans disagree with the Supreme Court's decision, while only 40% agree with it. Here in California, that number is much higher. A PPIC poll taken last October showed 77% of Californians against overturning Roe v. Wade versus 21% in favor of overturning it. Sue Dunlap is president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Los Angeles.
Research for decades has indicated time and time again that the overwhelming majority of Americans, including Americans who vote, support access to abortion. There's no question about that. And I'm not here today to argue about data that's not in front of us. I strongly encourage your listeners to do their own research if they do not believe this fact.
Yeah. How have you been preparing for the potential influx of people seeking help from out of state?
Yeah, here in Los Angeles, we have long known, and frankly, I'm horrified by this, but we have long known that this moment might come and that Los Angeles is a place that people turn to from all across the country for care, and that Imagine is a place where they can go to be free and safe when they don't know that they can have that in their own states. So we've long seen people traveling here. Over the past year, I've had over 100 people a month coming from across the country for sexual and reproductive health care, including abortion. And we've been preparing with great intent. We have built a clinical infrastructure that is mindful of airports, bus stations, and other transportation hubs. We have built partnerships with hospitals and other community providers. We train approximately 100 doctors a year in abortion care. And we do all of this with an awareness that here in Los Angeles, over time, in exactly this moment, we are very likely to have to stand up and ensure that our doors remain open no matter what for people seeking abortions in very desperate moments, fearful of and sometimes experiencing criminalization. So we have been incredibly intentional, aware of our role, and I'm very grateful to the many community partners and elected officials in this state and particularly in Los Angeles who have been a part of and who will continue to be a part of making sure that people can turn to us and come to us for care no matter what.
How concerned are you about the legal ramifications of this? I mean, could a state, you know, penalize you for aiding and abetting a procedure that's outlawed in that place and not here in California? But if someone comes from, say, Alabama or Oklahoma to California to get an abortion, are there legal ramifications?
Planned Parenthood's job right now and commitment is to take care of all the patients that we can. And we are absolutely working with attorneys and with legislators to ensure that we are able to safely provide care for all who turn to us. Now, I very much expect that the landscape will continue to change and that there will be different laws in different states and that there will be increasing efforts to criminalize both providers and patients. That's not a question. That's already happening, and that will happen with greater intensity over time. But my focus is on making sure that we are aware of those laws, that we are standing up to them, that we are following them, and most importantly, that we're able to take care of our patients and our providers and colleagues in this space who do this incredibly challenging yet important work.
There are organizations that provide funding support, right? So how can pregnant people seeking abortions find those facilities, those kinds of support?
Yeah, there are a lot of answers to that. So you can call the health center or Planned Parenthood or provider that you want to, and hopefully they will be able to plug you into that network that may or may not work on any given day because there are a lot of people trying to get through right now. There are abortion funds that people can reach out to. There are resources online that people can reach out to. The number one thing I would encourage people to do is make sure that as you do reach out, that you are confident in who you are calling. We have seen many articles and lived in with the experience of there being false sort of actors in this space who claim to be there to protect or support the choice and the care that someone may choose, but that are actually politically motivated and working to make sure that people do not have access to abortion care. So I strongly encourage any people seeking abortion to seek out abortion funds, to seek out providers and ask for help, because there's a lot of help out there, but you do have to reach out. But I promise you there are so many folks working in this space right now that, and I want to offer that hope, even as I know in this horrible moment where the federal right to abortion is no longer guaranteed, where there's states in this country where abortion is criminalized, I know there will be people who are not able to get care, but if you're out there and this is a desperate moment for you and you do need care, please pick up the phone or go online or reach out to a trusted friend, because there are people who will help you. And we here in Los Angeles and in California will do all that we can for you. And I know that there are other states all across the country that would answer that question the exact same way.
Justice Clarence Thomas had this concurring opinion that suggests that access to contraception could be at risk in the future as well. How might your organization plan for that scenario?
Our work is to plan for today and plan for the future. I am horrified that we're living in a moment where we're having a reasonable conversation about contraception being outlawed in 2022, let alone into the future. So what I would say to that is I go out there and vote, go out there and protest, go out there and make your voice and your opinions known, because reasonable people in this country, the overwhelming majority of people in this country, support contraception and support abortion. And we cannot let a future that does not allow for people to sort of control and protect and advocate for their own futures and their own bodies to continue to progress.
Sue Dunlap, head of Planned Parenthood Los Angeles. Sue, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
And as I mentioned earlier, we reached out to get your thoughts about the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. Here are some of those comments.
As a female, I am highly, highly disappointed with our Supreme Court justice decision. This decision will impact the underserved communities around this country, women that don't have resources, women of color. It will not affect rich white women at all. They can fly wherever, whenever, and get an abortion if they want. And the fact that the Supreme Court has made this decision along with the gun decision shows the lack of understanding, the lack of a willingness to see what the real problems are in this country. It's not women.
Hi, my name's Christian. The first thought that came to my mind was anger and shock and disbelief. More for the states that aren't as liberal as California and for the women and girls that are not going to be protected from rape and incest and they're going to be forced to carry out these traumatic births. I also believe that it's women's fundamental right to choose, and they just took that away from us in order to control our medical decisions that are very personal to us. It affects me because I have a daughter who is 18, and if she got in a situation or something happened, I want her to have that right to choose.
This is Tom Kettery, and all I can say is at 17 years old when my daughter was raped, if this would have been in vogue like it is now, my daughter would have had to give birth to a rapist child. It's just, it's mind-boggling, and all I can say is what's next.
I worry about my nieces. I worry about their rights. I worry about them having very limited choices of where to stay, what states will accept them, and what states will put them in danger. Most of all, I worry about our future rights that no longer feels permanent and solid.
Just some of the calls and messages we've gotten over the course of the weekend since the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. Coming up on Greater LA, Catholicism and the abortion debate, how catechism affected one person's view. That's straight ahead on GLA, on the other side of this.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Earn your graduate degree in a flexible online format from University of Southern California and learn from faculty at the top of their fields in areas such as business, health, law, engineering, psychology, communications, and more. Explore your options today at online.usc.edu.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis, and how growing up Catholic shaped the opinions of one man from Orange County. In his latest Los Angeles Times column, Gustavo Arellano writes about his and his family's own experiences as people of faith, but also people of OC, people of California, people of America, and specifically how abortion is taught in the Catholic Church in America. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
In your column, you talk about your experience going to catechism growing up. First of all, for all the non-Catholics and the unknowing, what is catechism?
Catechism, in the Catholic Church at least, it's classes that you take in order to receive sacraments. So in the Catholic Church, there are seven sacraments. Lay people like myself, we are able to get six of them. So as a child, you get, let's see, you get baptized, you get reconciliation, then you get communion, which allows us to get that wafer that people who are not Catholic always obsess about, but we think is a body of Christ. So when I was in high school, we had confirmation, which is basically young adults take it and just affirm that they are going to be Catholics as they go into adulthood.
So it's kind of like Sunday school, but not really.
So yeah, it's Sunday school, but specified for these specific sacraments. So it's always going to change depending on what the sacrament
right,
is.
I remember Sunday school from the Orthodox Church. So then what was your experience in catechism? I mean, tell us more about how you were taught about it through the church.
Oh, well, with abortion, I remember it distinctly. We were taught that abortion is evil. People who get abortions are going to burn in hell. There is no exception to ever getting abortion. So it doesn't matter with rape, with incest, if the mother's life is in danger, it's unacceptable completely. And if that still didn't get into our mind, then during that class, we in the basement of St. Boniface Church in Anaheim, we saw a film, and it was about a half hour film, and it showed not just fetuses, but actual abortions happening. So it was basically a scared straight attempt by the people who were teaching us catechism for confirmation to make us be disgusted at all abortions and to not question anyone who says that there's nuance to the abortion debate.
A pretty graphic display. Does that happen in other churches as well? Is that sort of the official thing that happens at catechism and around the world?
You know, after I wrote my column, I received letters from dozens of people who went through that same situation. I also heard people who did not go through that in their catechism classes and who just heard lectures about abortion. But, you know, when it I don't know the reasoning. This is late 90s in Orange County. I don't know why. I don't know if this was a specific mandate by the Diocese of Orange or the bishop at the time. But it happened. It definitely happened.
You talk, Gustavo, about the majority of the justices on the Supreme Court are Catholic, right? Catholicism is also one of the biggest religious groups in America and the world, for that matter. But you can't make someone's religion a litmus test, right, for justices.
You never should. You never should. But what we do know for a fact is that these Catholic, six of the nine justices are Catholic. One of them, Sonia Sotomayor, voted against the overturning of Roe versus Wade. John Roberts, also Catholic, said, I'm going to vote against it, but I still think Roe versus Wade should be overturned. So you have the remaining Catholics, not just, the types of Catholics who are a little bit more on the conservative side, who think Pope Francis is too liberal, but these are also justices who are original. So it's like fundamentalism on fundamentalism. When you have that, that is not a good recipe for modernity. When you have people who think that we should see the Constitution only in the eyes of the founders, this whole doctrine of originalism, well, then, yeah, you're going to have a lot of the stuff that we now think modernity slowly being overturned.
You write in your column, it's far easier, quote, it's far easier to fight for the unborn than to defend the living. What do you mean by that?
A lot of Catholics who are against abortion have been criticizing me for that. And they say, don't you think abortion is murder? Don't you think that, killing people is bad? And I do think killing people is bad. I also happen to think that when it comes to the Catholic Church, they're the last people who should be lecturing anyone on killing people. This is a church that led, that slayed hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in the conquest under the banner of Catholicism. You also have spiritual murder when it comes to the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal. And we're not even going to get into the poverty of that, but standing up to against poverty, against sex abuse, against bishops who excuse sex abuse, very few people want to do that. I'll say this, in the 20 years that I've covered the sex abuse scandal, a lot of times the people who are the most anti-abortion, they were not the ones who were criticizing the bishops when it came to the spiritual genocide that has been sex abuse in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, heartbreaking. We have talked about politics in Orange County changing, and do you think that's true of the politics of this issue as well?
The Democratic Party of Orange County, the chair is Ada Briseño. She actually sits on the board of Planned Parenthood. So you could bet on her really using this issue, the overturning of Roe versus Wade, to rally Democrats at a time when the Democratic Party in Orange County is ascendant. And also, remember, even though we have talked a lot about how Orange County has changed on the conservative side, they never voted for Trump for one matter. You could see even those Republican women who were against Trump and, are maybe not pro-abortion, but definitely don't want the Supreme Court dictating what they can do with their bodies. It's going to be really interesting come November, of course, all over the country, but especially in Orange County, because I really don't see the anti-abortion vote really being more riled up than they already are, which is to say not that much.
Gustavo Arellano, columnist at the LA Times. Gustavo, as always, thank you, my friend.
Gracias.
That's it for today. Tomorrow, LGBTQ students throw a prom their own way. Hope you can join us for Greater LA tomorrow. Visit our website anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us some story ideas. Subscribe to the podcast, too, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Or you can get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Juliana Mayo, Kaylee Wells, Rebecca Ludman, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Christine Comito, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on today's episode. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your ears and your time. Have yourself a great Monday.